Good morning. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 11th, 2000. In the fireside room this morning is Mim Campbell. Today's session number is 2002, and it's titled 101 Faith Place, Entry Points for Nurturing Faith at Home, Families Individually Wrapped and Wired. Let's listen in. Place, Entry Points for Nurturing the Home. Today we're talking about families wrapped and wired. Okay, which is a really kind of interesting way of looking at it, I guess. And we're going to go way past the wrapped and way past the wired to think through what that actually means. But I wanted to begin today talking about gifts. Even the gift of this day is something that we can be oh so thankful for. Amen. When we stop and think of how clear the sky is and the treat of the mountains and the rush of the streams behind us. And then we look around to see the amazing diversity that is among us, you know, in generations, in genders, in experience. You know, we knock on someone's door when we say, hi, how are you? And they open it a crack when they say, oh, and then carry on a story that they feel most comfortable with. And it becomes a gift to us in whatever form or fashion it takes. Often we are so immersed in family that we don't often step aside or back from it long enough to go, a gift, to be sure. Especially last night when my two came home at 12:15 and their curfew is 11:30 and I didn't see them in the places where they were going to be, but they switched and played cards a little longer and I thought, a gift, to be sure. But they are, to be sure, a gift. And we can look at each individual in our families who may be grown now or still in the midst of growth, and we all are, but we might not see immediately and from day to day that growth happen. But individual gifts that have made a difference in shaping our lives and our family life. I'd like us first to think of our entire family as a gift to be offered. And if you were to look at this gift and kind of just look at it from side to side, and as you would move it around and see the different sides of the cube, think of the different characteristics of your family that have become a gift to offer. Whether it's athletics, whether it's an incredible openness to neighborhood visitors or involvement. What are some of the gifts that your family has to offer as a whole? Pardon?
As a whole. Maybe.
Yeah, as a whole. When you look at your family and say, wow, yeah, they're a gift. And God intended for each member of our family ideally to come together and complement each other. And, you know, we talked about the brokenness in Bible study this morning and the many times where we've been in it for ourselves rather than for the whole family and broken down some of God's good intent. But even so, we are a gift to one another. What are some ways that your family is a gift to your community, to your church, to you? Let's name some things that come to mind.
Music,
okay? And bottom line, in case you're wondering, we all have been a gift as a family to others. It's a little harder to notice now or to appreciate that because when you look at the early 1900s, the identity of a family pretty much existed within a homestead, you know, or within a place. And you could drive by and go, oh, yeah, that's the Andersons, or oh, yeah, that's. And you'd get a snapshot of that family identity and probably especially the gift they would have to offer, whether a practical one in a service they would provide to the community or in a character. Like, oh, they're such a fun family. They are so life-giving. You know, that kind of thing. More so now, we act as individuals and play off a family base. But to recover that identity and begin to appreciate it is a gift in itself. Are there any other things that just come to mind?
Mine is helping me when I need help.
helping you when you need help. Okay, so your family's great at your service, kind of thing.
Humor.
That's a good one. Okay, other things?
I think hospitality. I seem to be the house on the block that all the kids congregate at, and I don't always look at that as a gift. But my child is.
They can all go both ways, can't they? And maybe even for some, especially those of us who have younger children or older ones now who have had the experience of that has led them to a maturity in faith or the childlike faith that comes from very young ones, they say the most incredible things that can humble you in your faithfulness. You know, and that's kind of where I'm at right now with the four children that I have. There's many gifts that we have to offer as a family, and it's made up of many individual gifts. Don't you depend on different members of your family to offer different things at different times? And at a family event or something, if one is missing that piece or that layer or that, you know, that influence isn't there to shape it in all that you'd imagine that it could be. And the gifts of the day. You know, many of us, we're unique in our personalities and within our family, and we'll talk about that a little bit too in a minute. But as we come into our days, are there certain ones that are just morning people? And you just depend on them to kind of get you going there. And then there's a few that you're going, oh, please let me get out of the house before they get out of bed. You know, they are not gifted with the celebration of morning. You know, there are many unique gifts that are really known to us, that are obvious to many. You know, if we were to describe ourselves as how others might see us, we would identify many external characteristics of who we are. And of what people know us to have, what car we drive, where we live, where we might work, you know, some of the known kind of more public things that people often define us by, and even maybe our families. And many people, oftentimes I was involved in a pastor's family for 15 years, and people say, oh, I can't believe your family, and da-da-da-da, and my, you know, I'm going, do I know these people? You know, because of what goes on sometimes within that gift box isn't always revealed without. And that is so common to all of us that it's just part of the journey we're on. But in looking at some of the more obvious gifts we have to offer, that we can come to depend on, you know, that are known within our family or and in our wider community, there's a whole nother set of gifts that lie within us that shape who and what we are. Now, oftentimes in families, we become so close, you know, or familiar with being close or not, that we sometimes forget that we are not extensions of each other. That the way I think is not necessarily the way somebody else thinks. I have some cards for you to take with you as you go today, but I have... They're kind of talk starters, or I call them quick starts. But the way that somebody might, the way you might see something is different from the way somebody else might see something. Even if you go to a movie as a family, or as a couple, or as a friend, we take in different things. And the conversation that might end, you know, come in following that video or that movie would be, oh, can you believe the special effects? You know, special effects. Oh, that story, it was incredible. Wasn't it amazing? The story, oh, I thought so-and-so was gorgeous. What's his name again? You don't know the name, and then they list the town, the place, the time, the character, you know? And we all come at it from different perspectives. Have you had that kind of experience in your family where things are interpreted differently? Why? Because we're all wired differently. And sometimes we can... be irritated with that. You know, I have one story to tell about my daughter Miriam. She's 8 now, but when she was 5, we were baking cookies, and I thought this was a wonderful, you know, mother-daughter bonding time, and I was so into mixing that cookie dough that I wasn't really paying close attention to her conversation, and she was saying, Mom, you know what? And I'm going, what? You know, and my focus was on the mixer, and she was like, Mom, Mom, you know, and finally I said, what? And I stepped back far enough so that she could get in. And she completely faced me and said, now, I've got your attention. You know? And to me, it didn't occur at all because I'm not an external visual person, or I don't necessarily, you know, need to see eye contact to have conversation. She does. It was driving me crazy. And so what I'd like for us to do during this time together is to open our gifts to see the many internal things that are going on. I'll give you this gift when I'm done. Okay, to see the many different things that are formed within us. We may influence any one of these to some extent. It's kind of hard. It's not necessarily the bow on top. There you go. Sometimes gifts are hard to open. But as you can see, there's many different things, and I did not exhaust the list. I kind of did a last minute, I think I remember them because I copied them, and somehow they've disappeared into Holden Lake Air. But anyway, our values, our priorities, our short-term, long-term memory, faith perspectives, our own self-concept, voluntary, involuntary systems all work a little differently and set a different pace for us in our lives. Some of us may have high blood pressure. Some of us have low blood pressure. Some of us can walk a long ways because of it. Some of us can't. Some of us have arthritis. Some of us are destined to. I know I'm on my way. You know, our sensory organs, how we perceive things, whether we wear our glasses regularly or not, how we see what we see. Internal organs, our emotions, how we deal with things, you know, which is largely dependent on our information processing system, which we're going to spend a little time with today. It's one of the many things, but the way we take in information, the way we're wired to do that, makes a difference in how we interpret a situation, how we remember it for a later time. I love it how we as couples sometimes deal with things and how differently we remember something. Oh no, I remember. Oh no, was I there? You know, because we remember different things about it. We take in different kinds of information based on how we're wired to do that.
There's a famous song from Gigi. It was that night. No, the moon was shining. No, it wasn't.
Remember that duet? Was I there?
Typical.
And, you know, as funny as some of that sounds, and we could probably recover in a second, you know, an experience similar to that in our own lives, whether it's with a friend, a child, you know, a spouse, or, you know, and as funny as it is, it can, if not addressed and appreciated, begin a gradual breakdown to the point that we might go, whoa, what happened here? And the less in touch we are with another's way, you know, another's wiring system, then the more we hold on to our own. And so it's important, I think, for us to every once in a while reflect upon that. And I have some things that I'd like to pass around that we'll spend just a little bit of time doing with. We're going to cruise through a few things and kind of in a surface, more of a surface way, and then I'll let you take these home and hopefully do a little more reflection with your families, because we'd like to cruise through the whole information processing thing and then come back to what does that mean for giftedness as a family as we create a mission statement to serve and things. Okay. Have you ever explained something to someone or talked to them about something and it's almost to the effect of, could you run that by me one more time? Or even felt the same way? I've sat in a few sermons like that, but we won't get into that. There's lots of different ways that we can, or lots of different points of reference that we can use to connect, get in touch with who we are and who someone else might be. If you flip side the cover, you'll see the modality checklist. And from this perspective, they divide us into three categories, not necessarily clearly defined, but sometimes that we have a preference one over the other. Some of us, if you want to cruise through each one of these categories as I kind of address them for a second, many of us are just fine in the hearing. All I need to do is hear something, and I get it. Okay, that's more the auditory thing, and that I really like talking through problems rather than thinking them through or writing them down, or I like talking through a problem. I love to memorize information by repeating it over and over again, like in an auditory sort of way. And I'd rather sit and listen to a recording of a book than sit and read it. It's been a gift to me as I travel back and forth to work. I love to do that. Maybe your preference is auditory. Many of us are visual learners. Could you just show me that? Could you give me an illustration kind of what you were just saying there? Could you write it on the board for me? We like colorful objects and things like that. We prefer books that have pictures or maybe some calligraphy or some variety of print. We look like we're daydreaming as we form mental pictures. Some of us are internal visual people. Do some of you keep grocery lists in your head rather than on paper and pride yourself in doing that? That would be an internal visual person. Or I usually remember better when I'm actually seeing the person I'm talking to. Oh, I'm waiting for my computer to have that option. Kinesthetic is that we have difficulty sitting still. You know, we got to move around. Do you have friends that are just like this, you know, or something, and you're going, do you need to leave? Do you need to go? What do you need to do? You know, but they need to move, kind of, you know. I usually learn best when I'm physically participating in a task. Yeah, can you not just show me, but can we do it? Let's try it. I almost always have some body part in motion. Do you see people that are just like this sometimes? You know, I think, man, are they nervous? No way. They're just, that's their way of processing. Many classrooms today are having problems because they're making kids still sit still. And many of them have had the opportunity in their preschool years to celebrate their preference, their modality preference, and have had the opportunity to move. And as soon as they get them to sit still, it's stifling a part of them that is needed to learn. And maybe some of us really like watching the movie instead of listening to it or reading the book about it. Yeah? Do you see yourself fitting into one or more of these categories? Do you see some of your family members fitting into some of these categories, and they may not be your own? It takes a different length of time to process. If someone tells us once, we're done, right? 30 seconds, we're out of there. Okay, but if somebody's going, well, could you show me that? You know, it takes a little longer, doesn't it? For those of us that are auditory, oh, man, I got to show you. Oh, well, okay. You know, and then you want to do it with me? Then that takes even more time, you know. So we're talking about a little more than toleration here. And it's an appreciation for the gift that each would have to offer from their own, the way that they're each wired. Now, another form is some of us are probably very familiar with, and that is the whole Myers-Briggs. Yeah. You know, whether we're an I and IFTJ or whatever, you know, and all that goes. Well, within our family, it's kind of an important thing to consider. You know, some of us are really extroverts. We love to get out there and socialize, you know, and let's just cover the grounds here. And then there's some that are really introverts, which doesn't necessarily mean quiet. It means that I draw from within or from maybe one or two. But not the whole entire world at once, I'm sorry, you know. And so figuring out where people derive the wealth or the life-giving energy makes a difference. You know, parents that really want their kids to be on the go, nonstop. You know, okay, we've scheduled them in 9 to 5 Saturday, Sunday we go to church, and then we got our afternoon soccer game, and then we're doing that. And those kids that need the internal kind of quiet place to redefine themselves go nuts. You know, that quiet time, that nap time, some kids will lay down and do it. They may be our upcoming introverts. You know, the extroverts, the ones that say, I can't get that kid to nap, well, they run on energy of other people, other things, other stimuli. And as we grow, we still do that too. You know, some people that are into the night, whoa, now I need one more stimulus, you know, as their partner's going, I don't think so, you know, and one might go more to a room and read as the other is like, oh, come on, honey, you know, let's invite a friend over. It's only 10 o'clock, they can do the news, you know. So that kind of thing makes a difference. Or how we make sense of things. Do we like things in logical, sequential order? Or are we like, oh yeah, I can kind of read between those lines. I got the message there. And then we form our own interpretation. And how do we create a lifestyle orientation? How do we relate to the world around us? Do we organize it? Or do we kind of just experience it and it feels good and we more file it in a memory system to draw when the occasion arises to enrich another moment? All of those things make a difference in how we relate to each other. Sometimes when we have clashes in relationships, you know, even between a mother and daughter, or father, or son, or vice versa, or whichever way you want to go, it maybe can be that clash of introvert and extrovert. Or that clash of whether we're thinking or feeling. You know, like, I told you, well, you know, I was thinking about that, but then, you know, I kind of felt this. You know, and so to listen to each other, but first to decide, where are we coming from? This is another way that we can be wired. I'd like to spend a little more time on the third one, which is known as the Gregoric model for processing information. If you're interested in looking at more of what we will be spending a short time on today, there's a book in the bookstore called The Way We Learn, How to Discover and Teach Your Child's Strengths, but it's excellent for any age. It's a real simple kind of learn and check. So you walk through it, and by the time you're done with it, it's, oh, I know who I am and pretty much everyone else. Not that you've labeled them, but you've gained an appreciation.
That's noted on the bottom of the page in case anybody wants to know.
Okay. Okay, good. All right, and so I'm just going to quickly scan through what that is, and then I'd like to pass out some things so that you can get a handle on what that means. But Gregoric divides the process into the way we gather it and the way that we order it. As we gather information, there's many of us that are concrete thinkers. We take in information directly from our senses. What we see is what we get. That's it. We're not going to spend any more time thinking about it. There it is. Okay? Or it's abstract. Okay? We take in the information. Oh, yeah. This kind of reminds me of. We kind of read between the little lines a little bit, add a little experience to it, use some imagination, you know, and there's a little bit more maybe flexibility in that, but that's called abstract. And then once we take in this information, we order it in what Gregoric would say two ways. Sequential, that we can do it in a logical, step-by-step manner. We take it in a concrete way. We can order it in a step-by-step manner. Or we can take it in kind of little bits and pieces now and then, or draw from our memory later, focus on the accomplishment rather than the order, or focus on the overall experience or that kind of thing. I still love that For the Love of the Game, which Kevin Costner was in, you know, and I couldn't tell you the field. I can't tell you the number of whether it was a no-hitter or not. I think it was now. But I love the love story. Oh, and I can't even remember who he's in love with. But, you know, I just love going back to that and picking out different pieces. That would consider me more of a random thinker. Now, to get a little more of a handle on that, I'm going to pass out a little worksheet. And I think I have some additional copies so that if you want to take some extras with you, you can do that. But it's called the Dominant Learning Style Characteristics. And if you want to cruise through those concrete randoms, then it really is hard because we don't really like to lock ourselves into anything. We like to be creative and flexible. And if the occasion arises, maybe I could rise to that, you know. And so if you're there, appreciate that, okay? We aren't about trying to pronounce any kind of judgment or make someone feel uncomfortable, like, oh, I didn't want to be that kind of person. But more that we can begin to honor who we are and from where we're coming from. Has everybody pretty much moved through that? How many here do we have as concrete sequentials?
What are we counting on?
Oh, you add each category.
How many?
Yep. How many? And then you see which is the highest total in the category, and that might be something that you're more oriented to. And we have a few concrete sequentials. So for you, I'll try to make sure that we do get the job done. Okay. And how many are abstract sequentials? Have we got the score leaning more that way?
Well, I have two. The top scores are the same.
Are they?
Ah, she's zip by something.
Yeah, and that can happen too. And if for no other reason than, oh, yeah, and that's okay. Yeah, that would probably say your dominant is sequential then, but you could go back and forth with you. What about abstract randoms? We have some abstract randoms? Okay, and we'll let you be the thermometer in this room. If it gets too tense or you sense anyone feeling a little bit lonely, you go over and sit next to them, okay? Okay, and how many concrete randoms do we have? We have a few of those too. Okay, and you know what? Every single one of us are necessary, even those of you that are sitting on the fence, because we need an ability to go both ways, some of us, to create the community that we need or the families that we're about. If you want to look at the next pages, well, first of all, is anyone really feeling uncomfortable with, oh, I didn't know that that was where I was at?
We don't really know what those words mean.
Yeah. No. So we're going to find out a little bit about what those mean. Okay. You got your daughter back.
My daughter, and for sure she was that. I was surprised at
this. What I was surprised to see is that of my four children, they each are four different ones.
Oh,
and I thought, oh, Lord, I knew it. I should have given up before I started. But look at what do they do best. This is where we can really honor the strengths of each category. The dominant concrete sequential person, their key word is facts. They apply ideas in a practical way. They organize, fine-tune ideas to make them more efficient, economical, produce concrete products from abstract ideas, and work well within time limits. Okay? How would you like to do this? Should we go through the strengths first and then what's harder for them and things, or should we just scan through the whole category first?
Just scan.
Scan through the whole category?
Yeah.
Okay, so if we look at what makes the most sense to a dominant, concrete, sequential person, working systematically, step by step, paying close attention to details, having a schedule to follow, using literal interpretations, knowing what's expected of them, establishing routines and ways of doing things. What's hard for them? Working in groups. Because they know what they're doing, they know how to do it. Let's get the job done. Discussion with no specific point. Have you ever been in one like that? Some of you? Oh, and if you've got a dominant sequential person, it's not that they're not interested in you. It's like, oh, can we get to the point? Okay. Working in a disorganized environment, oh, that's tough. Following incomplete or unclear instructions, working with abstract ideas, demands to use your imagination.
Yeah.
It's like, what imagination? Questions with no right or wrong answers. You know, if you hear people say, oh, no, that's a little gray. Could we have a little more clarity there? What questions do they ask when learning? What facts do I need? How do I do it? What should it look like? And when is it due? They work real well in structural positions where someone tells them what to do. Okay, I get it. Let's go for it. You know, not to say that I'm pegging you at all, but
yeah.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Okay, now, because I'm tired of hearing my voice, let's have someone who's an abstract sequential person read through what they do best. Who's an abstract? Marcia, you are an abstract sequential person. Okay.
Okay, what I do best, gather data before making decisions, analyze ideas, research, provide a logical sequence, use facts to prove or disprove theories, and analyze the means to achieve a goal.
Okay. And what makes most sense to you?
Using exact, well-researched information, learning more by watching than doing, using logical reasoning, needing a teacher who is an expert on the subject, living in the world of abstract ideas, and working through an issue clearly.
Okay. Is there someone else who's an abstract sequential person? Okay, Marcia, would you mind continuing?
It's hard for me. Let's see. No time to deal with a subject thoroughly. Repeating the same tasks over and over. Lots of specific rules and regulations. Sentimental thinking. Expressing emotions. Being diplomatic when convincing someone else.
I'm in there before.
You're just wrong. Not monopolizing the conversation about a subject that interests them.
And what kind of questions might you ask?
I like, this is perfect. How do I know this is true? That's the question I ask all the time. How do you know that? Have we considered all the possibilities, and how will we accomplish?
Okay. Maybe some of you, now that you've heard some of the description, are going, yeah, I think so too. What about abstract random? Abstract random here? Okay, do you want to read a few and then you can read the next few? Okay. What you do best?
Listen sincerely to others, understand feelings and emotions, focus on themes and ideas, bring harmony to group situations, have good rapport with almost anybody. Recognize the emotional needs of others.
Okay, and what makes most sense to you?
Personalizing learning, having broad general principles, maintaining friendly relationships with everyone whenever possible, participating enthusiastically in projects they believe in, emphasizing high morale, deciding with the heart, not the head.
Okay. And what are some things that are hard for you?
Having to explain or justify feelings, competition, working with unfriendly people, giving exact details, accepting even positive criticism, focusing on one thing at a time.
Okay, and questions?
What does this have to do with me? And how can I make a difference?
Okay. And finally, we have the concrete randoms. And who are concrete randoms? We had a couple back in here. Okay, do you want to divide the time too? And what do you do best?
What do you do best? We inspire others to take action.
All right, I believe it.
We see many options and solutions.
All right.
Contribute unusual and creative ideas. Visualize the future. Often find different way to do things. Accept many types of people. Think fast on their feet. Take risks.
Okay, and what makes most sense to you?
Using insight and instinct to solve problems, working with general time frames rather than specific deadlines, developing and testing many solutions, using real life experiences to learn, trying something themselves rather than taking your word for it.
Okay, and what's hard for this group?
Restrictions and limitations, formal reports, routines, redoing anything once it's done, keeping detailed records showing how they got an answer, choosing only one answer, and having no options.
Ooh, yeah. And what's the question you usually ask?
How much of this is really necessary?
Okay. Now that's kind of parallel tracking the concrete sequential that's going, what's the point? But this person's saying, how much of this is necessary? Do you see what a difference this makes in orientation and that kind of thing? I have learned so much from becoming familiar with Cynthia Ulrich Tobias and her work with Gregoric's method as I look at my family system. And I've looked with my children. I've also looked with my parents and my brothers and sisters and how their way of looking at things has shaped how I have looked at things. And yes?
I have a question. I came in three on this dominant abstract random and dominant concrete random, and there were many points under the abstract random that I associate with. But I put, I was dominant concrete sequential, 4 points. So I'm real mixture.
Do you know, the one thing that Gregoric does say that as we mature and have gained a variety of experiences, that sometimes we can have a more balanced way of looking at things. But if we got down to the core of who we were, under the most stress, we would revert to the most dominant one or the one that we prefer most. But in a flexible, non-stressful situation, especially if we've had experience doing that or it's been necessary for us to adapt accordingly. Now, I am an abstract sequential. And so I really don't like filling out reports and things like that. And being in the corporate offices, I love ideas and I love, having a vision for things that need to be done. And they said, okay, do it. And it's like, oh, Jeez, could I get someone else to take care of that for me? You know? Yeah.
I think I've seen others like this where you do it as you see yourself and then others do it as they see you.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you some idea of what is it you're projecting as opposed to what is it you're
projecting. Yeah. And then given the circumstances, you know, you might find one category, you know, more comfortable than another, especially as you've had more experience within it. But it is kind of within. Yesterday we talked about kind of a dotted line person or a dotted line home as the way that we would dream it or God intended it. But then wavy lines will surround those dotted lines as what influences us shapes us. You know, and there's many waves of influence, whether they're people, their experiences, their relationships that shape who we are and how we're wired. You know, if we find out, whoa, that doesn't work in this situation, as we mature, we begin to adapt. You know, or as we're stimulated to do that, if children are threatened, you know, into a particular kind of behavior or something, they will jumpstart, you know, another category. But as family members, it's important for us to stop and take a look at who we're working with. You know, how many of you that are more into that concrete sequential go nuts when you make a plan, a phone call to somebody, you know, and say, oh, I'd like to have you come and do this at this particular time, and it might be a few months down the road, and they go, okay, can we, like, get back to you? And then they're considering a few things and a few other things that they're involved in. And they might even weigh priorities a little differently, you know, as you go into the abstract randoms and things like that. And then they might come back to you maybe 2 weeks later, but you wanted to get that job done. You know, and so, you know, conflict can happen in the midst of that. Misunderstanding can happen in the midst of that. And a toleration for individuality rather than an appreciation for individuality. And we need to see where our stress points are, where our bottom lines are. We use bottom lines a lot at our house. I'll say, oh, you hit my bottom line. And then they go, yep, you hit mine too. Or something. But we deal with it then. Okay, so what do you need? And what do you need? Basically, I think that a lot of conflict happens because a need is not fulfilled. And it could be a need for attention, it could be a need for clarity, it could be a need for time, it could be a need for many things, which is really a part of how we're wired. You know, and so to take a look at that makes a difference. Do you have any comments on this before we move to the next step? Yes.
I think as we have moved through the generations, and there are several here, that it's very easy, and I think that, as you say, we fit into different categories. Mm-hmm. Because as our lives have changed, we have learned a lot, we have experienced a lot, and then when we want to do things with the younger generations, we also realize and value their time and their commitments. And so when you say, we'd like to set a time, and it's hard for them to get back, I think we have become a lot more flexible. Mm-hmm. And I could see myself at different ages in these categories. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the things that we have become. A tolerant is not a good word because for us, because we love whatever we can do, mm-hmm. and whatever time we can have. Mm-hmm. But it's just that we become very accepting. Mm-hmm. And adjust our schedules and doing things more.
Well, and that's a gift then that you have to offer to. It's not known to everyone. Sometimes the more, the stronger our own strength of identity in who we are, the easier it is to be more flexible. Also,
Sadie has a nice term.
I call it sort of mellowing out.
It is.
Mellowing out. Yeah. And maybe you could see yourself in more categories because you've had an occasion to adapt that accordingly.
That also shows, I think, in what we do or any activities we work in church.
Mm-hmm.
We are just much more mellowing out.
But when I'm playing sub organ, I want to know the hymns. I want to know the scripture. I want to be ready because I don't play every week, and I know that I have to practice. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's got to have some order to it.
And you might have a pastor happy. That's going, well, I'm still kind of developing the theme. Can I let you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But and we don't want to get so tied to this either, that we lock someone in, because as we can see, we sit on the fence and we see it this way, we see it that way. But when we talk about little ones growing, whether they're ones that are intimately known to you or known within church or with your in your neighborhood, it's important that we affirm, you know, the core of who they are, so that they can use that as a strong point of reference as they begin to adapt accordingly. Often, if we consider them an extension of who we are, then we don't give them the privilege of developing who they are and who they can be. And as conflict or challenge may happen in a family, and we grow from functional and dreaming of being to more dysfunctional, or, you know, a little more imbalanced, as one takes center stage or another does, and others adapt accordingly, and, you know, you become different players within the system, we can adapt once again and accordingly. And sometimes to our advantage, sometimes not. Sometimes we can be stifled in our growth if that window of opportunity for growth, you know, and that strengthening of our own identity and the abilities that we are working, you know, that are God-given to us, those windows open and close. And so we need to be aware of who these people are, what their unique gifts they have to offer, even our own family. And I'd like to expand for a second our family into another definition, fully family, but fully faith community. That whether we are intending to or not, we daily shape each other's concept of who God is and what faith means. We are a faith community, whether we intend to be or not. Whether we move as a unit into one social function and then into another religious function and then into an athletic function and then back home again, we shape each other's faith. There is a depth within each one of us that longs to be filled, and it will be with some thing. It becomes the task of the church and essentially the parents, who Martin Luther claimed to be the bishop and bishopess of the home, to shape it with the love, the shape and feel really, with the love, joy, peace, hope, and coping skills for only God can give. And if we don't, then they will begin to fill it with other things. And we have, each one of us have, with other things. But sometimes it's like taking out the bottom of an empty coffee can and pouring it in, and it all goes out. Pouring more in, it all goes out, you know. But until we filled it with only what God can give, it's going to flow through and go on into something else, and we'll long for more. Okay, I'd like to move into a little bit of giftedness now. And this is just conversation starters, really. And hopefully you'll take it and reflect a little more at home of the whether you use Myers-Briggs in a more simplified way in your own home, or you take the Gregoric method, or you look at the modalities, you know, and how we work with those. But anyway, I'd like to tell you a story of my two that are now 12 and 14. And when they were 2 and 3 and a half, we had a conversation one summer night. The younger one, 2, had yet to be acquainted with the fine institution of Sunday school, and lay on her back top bunk, looking out at the night sky. And the 3.5-year-old was just kind of laying there waiting for whatever else was supposed to happen tonight, you know, and she was pretty well seasoned in Sunday school, among other things. And so in the Linnea in the top bunk, wanting to prolong bedtime, said, "Mom, what do you think God looks like?" And I'm like, "Oh, honey, oh, you know," and I thought of all these songs we were going to sing and all these wonderful conversations we were going to have all through the night. And I said, "Well, what do you think God looks like, honey?" And she said, "Mom, I think God shines like those stars in the night." And I said, "Oh, yes." And then those songs were really coming to mind. But before we got too far, my seasoned Sunday schooler said, "He does not. He's on this piece of paper, and you can punch him out and hang him up if you want to." Well, now we can say that a few things were happening there, let alone the fact that I was her Sunday school teacher. But we could say that, yes, I was about the task of giving it to him so she'd have it, you know, and I did a lot of punching in front of those kids. But we could also say that she was an extreme visual learner. Mm. And what she saw in the punching out in the piece of paper, she also was a concrete sequential learner. Yes, this is Jesus. And we put him up on the flannel board, you know. And so a few things were happening there. It forever changed my vision of what it meant to be a Christian education director. But it also helped me to see where they were each coming from. And the task I had practically of nurturing God's goodness, you know, in their presence, but also in helping them to see faith flow, you know, so that it wasn't just a faith show. Mm-hmm. Now, often we want faith to show. And so we'll bring our kids to church, you know, give them a good acquaintance in our family life. Many as singles, we come and we fill our lives with what the church can offer. Mm-hmm. But how do we let faith flow into our everyday lives, into the giftedness, into the uniqueness, into the everyday ongoing beat of our lives? You know, so that in the midst of our giftedness, in the midst of how we're wired, we can appreciate God's intent for our family, for them as individuals, and then for their outreach to the community, whether in occupation, whether in perspective, or in God's great commission to go and encourage people to see things God's way. That's all a part of what a family is about and what a faith community is about. And so I wanted to spend just a little bit of time appreciating, yes, how we're wired, but then how we're gifted. The way we're wired is a gift. It is, as you can see. Can you imagine one of these categories just deleted from our society? You know, I mean, if those abstract randoms were gone, where would we be? There wouldn't be a whole lot of feeling there, you know? So we all are necessary. And so how we're wired is a gift. But what else do we have to offer? And we can come back to, what do we have to offer God as a family? What do we have to offer God creatively and naturally, who we are, you know? And I had an occasion with that one day when I was younger. My dad was a pastor, and they said, we are supposed to go and make disciples. And I thought, I don't think so. And they said, well, what is it? You know, all you have to do is be a witness. And I thought, oh, big word. I don't know. What does that mean? You know, proclaim Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Oh, boy. Ooh, I don't know. You know, and then the pastor said, or do what comes naturally. And I thought, I can handle that. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean whatever occurs to us at the moment. But with Christ as our innermost core of being and pulse center, we let faith flow freely through who we are, through how we're wired, through how we're gifted, through how we do what we do. Knowing that just sitting here right now is a faith statement. Aside from the fact we're at Holden Village, it's just who you are is a statement of faith, because God created you. And God spent time and had intent for you. And you are a statement of God's good intent. And then what you do with that, how you put faith in motion, is just adding to your own faith sharing and your ability to do that. To get in touch with that, once again, I'm going to give you a little form. And this is... can hardly be done now, but we'll become acquainted a little bit with it. It's a spiritual gifts inventory. Have any of you taken a spiritual gifts inventory before?
I've taken a course in spiritual gifts.
Some churches are doing it when new members come into churches and things. Chip Borgstead, who is the a professor for family ministry at Midland College in Nebraska, has developed a spiritual gifts inventory for the sake of family. What I'm passing out to you now is for the sake of adults. I also have copies of looking at your daughter's spiritual gifts and looking at your son's spiritual gifts. Now, I would say that this, and you can grab this when you leave today if you're interested in doing that. But what this does is, it's really meant for probably elementary age and older, but you can begin to scan through, and as you see different things that might be available in your preschoolers or younger ones, you can follow that or track that a little bit. But this is something that helps to see where you're at in a spiritually gifted way. And you take it as you would kind of a survey, and you follow through with that. And then at the back, it gives a description of what those particular gifts might be. If you want to take a look at those, there's start on page 6.5. And now we're not really boxing ourselves into a totally religious context here, okay? We're still creative, natural, who we are. And we're seeing ways that God lets faith flow through us in specific ways. Some of us might have the gift of teaching, be able to communicate what we know in a way with other people, in a way that they can understand. Mm-hmm. And as you go through, there's different categories for this. A biblical example, in daily life, what does it look like in your congregation? And then it gives you a chance to say, yeah, I've done that. Okay? But in daily life, recognizing the potential in each person and help them realize it. And then to tutor peers, to serve as buddies to younger children, or that kind of thing. And you go through skilled crafts, maybe the gifts of skilled crafts. In daily life, you like to fix and build things for friends and neighbors. Or you like that really hands-on service thing of working for Habitat for Humanity or a community project. Maybe the gift of administration. In daily life, organize neighborhood athletics, coordinate group projects, plan social activities for a group, that kind of thing. And then in your congregation, there's other things. There's the gift of advocacy. If you turn the page, in daily life, you speak up for students or for people who fall through the cracks of the system so that they can get encouragement and a chance to learn. In daily life, we make for the gift of shepherding, we make ourselves available to coach children or coworkers. We're a caring neighbor who stops regularly to listen to a new mother or a retired person. We reflect with others on opportunities ahead. Some of these, as we're just scanning through these, you might go, yep, that's me. But the gift of service, that we work through agencies or local food pantries, or we do a hands-on service things, volunteer a lunch hour a week to deliver meals to shut-ins, that kind of thing. Gift of artistry, paint a mural to beautify a neighborhood, plant and keep a garden in a local park, design clothing for community dramatic production, that kind of thing. And you know, you've had many creative versions of whatever your gift may be that you have probably expressed in many ways already. A gift of discernment, to help a group make the best choice in identifying options and their benefits. Now that would be our two guys over here. They like to come up with creative options and things like that. So discernment might just float right on in there. The gift of prayer. Maybe you're really, yes, when someone gives you a story that's on their heart and mind, that's real life, and a challenge to them, you take it immediately to heart. Whether the prayer chain or not, you enter, yes, you're on my prayer list and you mean it. And maybe that's your gift. And you love to go and talk with people and enter into prayer with them. Maybe the gift of networking. Volunteer coordinator. Yes, you like to organize that and coordinate things. Maintain a personal database of resources and contacts for projects. That might even include a great address list for Christmas cards. Oh, I need to do that someday. I'm always going, oh, where is that? But maintaining, okay, and then introducing friends who can help each other accomplish mutual goals. Like, oh yeah, you know what, so-and-so. Yeah, they're going through something like that too. Or, you know what, I think they know something about that. Yeah, they play golf well. Why don't you hook up? You know, that kind of thing. The gift of encouragement. Volunteer in help. That's homeless shelter again. And visiting sick or homebound. Mentoring an older person or a younger person. Encouragement could also enter into advocacy if you became more formal in doing that and encouraging people, being a voice for them, that kind of thing. There's a few others here. In fact, there's many, and you might find yourself in many different categories. These are many gifts that that you may be expressing in ways already. Gift of evangelism through words and actions. You help others experience God's grace and hope. You have conversations and relationships. You enter into those to point to Jesus as a visual example of God's love. Maybe it's music. Use music to bring people together to express emotion and to find a common focus. Gift of mercy, gather food, clothing, serve in homeless shelters. Even teaching children to take care of pets or that kind of thing. Gift of faith, and this hopefully would be common to many. Communicate a belief in a positive future. Show one's trust in others. And gift of giving, ask for others to ways that they can help out. Give financially. Some people, it's no problem to tithe. They just do it. It's just they're into giving, and whenever they get something, it's, well, who else needs some? The gift of listening, and we know some people that are in that category. Maybe you are one of them, too. You can listen endlessly and be a good, active listener. Gift of leadership, bringing together the gifts of others to form an active, empowered team, or being one that can facilitate others in developing their resources. Gift of hospitality, that would be you guys in your neighborhood. Seek to make others feel at ease and comfortable in their settings. You know, sometimes we think, yep, I'll be the one to put coffee out on first Sunday of every month. But hospitality is just our general presence and how we welcome each other, you know, or how we, the comfort level that we encounter others with. Okay, and last but not least, intergenerational relationships. Some of us are like, oh, I love kids. Oh, and then we go over to a youth. Oh, yes. Oh, can I do that car wash with you guys? You know, and then we're over and we're sitting with older people. And then, yep, I get it. Those boomers, they need attention. You know, whatever. But you can relate to all generations, and it feels good to do that. And you can gain a lot from any of them. The gift of knowledge, to help peers and coworkers face the rapid pace of change by sharing learning and doing it in relevant and real ways to them, can be a gift of knowledge. Well, we just scanned through a whole bunch of them. And as I said, we won't take the time to go through the 25 or so little options that you can mark. But I would encourage you to do that. And as you are, bring your family to mind and heart as you're doing that, and maybe even carry a symbol along for each one of them as you can begin to appreciate. And I'm sure you do already, but sometimes we need to go back and take those Polaroid snapshots to begin to do that all over again. And if somebody in your family has that gift of mercy and they're only three, let them. You know, I have one that came home from Sunday school when she was three one day, and she wanted to help. Everything was, can I help? And I was in a hurry, you know? And I was like, no, honey, that's okay. And she goes, Mom, don't you get it? And I said, what? And she goes, I'm a helper, just ask me. And I said, oh, and where did you learn that song? And Sunday school, 3 weeks ago, Mom, I've been trying to tell you, you know? And that, oh, that was her switch on. She is a helper, and still today, she's the one that'll be over there washing the tables for lunch and supper. She loves it. And because of that, we've developed a servant of the week at our house where, and she's one that always raises her hand. Can it be my turn, Mom? No, it was yours last week. Can I do it again? That's her thing, you know? But beginning to appreciate the gifts, you know, the spiritual gifts in a practical way, is part of that whole entry points for nurturing faith, letting it happen. And then as you do, as we're drawing to a close today, I would love to leave with you just a little mini process for developing a mission statement for your family based on the gifts that you have to offer, based on how each one of you are wired. As a unit, looking at that gift of the intact family that God has given you, no matter how many homes you reside in, what kind of driving word or phrase or motivation can give your family identity and direction? You know, we go back to good old Joshua, who said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Yeah, I don't know about you guys. Think it through, you know, and there's a whole context that goes with that Bible story. But it's like, you know, you guys think about it. But today, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Think of your home, your family, the gifts that you've been given, even the ongoing irritations that you experience on any given day. What could be that driving thread? You know, that momentum that keeps you going, that helps you to let go in times when it's hard, to find grace, to find forgiveness, to make fresh new starts, you know, to step back in honor, to regain a sense of faith community of God in your midst, with God as your Emmanuel, And to do that, I have a two-step process, really. One that has a ton of action words that you can look through and say, yep, our families, yep, we're into accomplishing things. No, we're into feeling things. We really like to know things. Together as a group, we explore. We love to hike. We love to do what we do. We love hands-on service kinds of things. Gear your gifts into what does that mean for what God has intended. And then throw that into a mission statement that you can put on your refrigerator or that you can put up, you know, in your home as you enter it. We have, as for me in my house, we will serve the Lord as we enter it. And I can tell you the number of kids in our neighborhood that are going, what does that mean? And the kids will say then and go to our mission statement and say, and it doesn't have to be long. It can be one sentence, you know. As God-given children of God, boom, you know. Or we as, you know, and say your family, you know, want to live in life-giving ways and take care of God's creation. You know, or, and then let that be the motivation or the inspiration that sets the practical pace for your day. And so that means on weekends, we want to try to do this, or we want to try to do that, and include that in one of the many things that we do. That's all, I think, a part of what God intends. Not that all of a sudden, okay, well, we'll do that 2 hours a week at church then, I guess, I promise, well, think about it. Because God's world is much bigger than the institution that we come and go from once or twice a week. It's everywhere and anywhere that we go out as individuals or families and relate to God's creation. And the biggest part of evangelism and faith sharing is people watching us and experiencing what that means to our family and then to them as they encounter who we are. Comments on that as I pass this out. Ways that you see your family as gifted in particular ways, or ways that you see yourselves motivated to do certain things. Are there some experiences that you've had within your family that have been, yes, we are affirming who God is, I guess, because we're doing this? Now, often in families, we're so segregated in our activities and just trying to accommodate activities, especially if we have families in the midst of growing children, that that's another service project or another program would be just another thing to do. And so bottom line, it's important that the faith statement that we have, or the mission statement that we have, the bottom line that flows through could be the faith flow. You know, what are we running on? Maybe it's this Bible verse from Ephesians that says, I've asked God from the wealth of his glory to give you power in his spirit to be strong in your inner selves. That maybe we're just about creatively strengthening each other's identity as God's children. And that Christ is actually at home in your heart first. And then, as a result of Christ residing in your heart, can help but be a part of your faith flow at home. And what that means to that. But so that we can understand how broad and long and high and deep is Christ's love. It goes way beyond the Apostles' Creed or the Lord's Prayer or the table prayer we say. There's one other book that I wanted to lift. It's not available in the bookstore, but it's called The Five Love Languages of Children. And there's four. Five Love Languages of Youth, Five Love Languages of Couples, and straight Five Love Languages. You can get any version you want. But it also is another point of reference of how do we best understand love. You know, is it through just somebody saying, I love you, and you say, okay. Or is it time spent? Oh, yes, they love me. Or I don't know if they do because they don't spend time with me anymore. Time is another one. Concrete gifts is another one. Yep, somebody will always say, oh, could I have this or could I have that? Oh, you didn't bring me anything. You know, that kind of thing. Or let's see, what's the other one? There's five in all. Oh, acts of service. I have one that loves to have me serve her. And I'm going, honey, isn't that enough love for today? But this is another great point of reference, and it's another bottom line at the core of who we are. You know, often as couples, we run into so much trouble because our way of receiving love isn't known, actually, you know, to our mate. If they just like hearing, I love you, and we really love time together. We're continually saying, oh, I need to spend time with you. Oh, you never have time for me. I love you. You never have time for me. You never have time for me. And to understand what each other's baseline need is for love can make a huge difference along the way. So that's just another point of reference. And I'm sure by now we're just about out of our time. Yes, we are. And so hopefully these are just seeds for growth as you're celebrating how your family is wired and gifted for ordinary, everyday service in amazing God-given ways. So thank you, Mary.
Thank you.